we compiled everything into about a 6-page report. We did our best to include like the key animal outcomes that we measured. So like we measured calf respiratory health and fecal scores, and then the dairy comp data. So the main diseases that were looked at were calf pneumonia, scours, and then adult cow mastitis and botrytis. So those are the four main diseases we focused on. So they got their report that had their dairy comp data for their disease rates, as well as any of the housing and management factors that we measured. And everything was obviously anonymous. They saw which farm they were, and then the 18 herd benchmark average or the 18 herds were shown so they could kind of see how they compare.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed.
With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, we have a couple of guests here joining us from the Cornell University Extension team, Lindsay Ferlito and Betsy Hicks. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks, Barry.
So those faithful listeners out there who've been listening to these episodes for the last couple of years might recognize Lindsay's name because she joined us about a year and a half ago on the podcast and talked a lot about cow comfort. Anyway, Lindsay, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
For those that might have missed that episode, can you give us a little bit of your background and what your role is at Cornell?
So I am the regional dairy specialist on Cornell Cooperative Extension's North Country Regional Ag Team. So I work with dairy farmers in the 6 counties of Northern New York, anything related to dairy management. And as you mentioned, we talked a lot about cow comfort last time. My background is in cow comfort and behavior. And I did a lot of work doing cow comfort assessments across the country before starting with Cornell 8 years ago now.
Great. Thanks for being on again. And thanks for bringing in a colleague. So Betsy Hicks is also joining us this time. Betsy, can you share a little bit of your background? And like, particularly, did you grow up in ag? Did you grow up in a dairy? And what's your role now?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Barry. Thanks for inviting me, Lindsay. So I am from New York. I grew up in Western New York. My parents have a beef farm, and I started raising replacement heifers when I was in high school back in the 90s. So that's how I got involved in the dairy industry. I did my grad work out at the University of Illinois in nutrition. I love nutrition and came back to New York and did nutritional consulting for 5 years before coming to Extension. And I'm coming up on my 10-year anniversary with Cornell Cooperative Extension. So within my role here, I'm a little bit further south than Lindsay. I cover 6 counties in central New York. We call it South Central. But I have a lot of great dairy farmers, and I work on everything from grazing to troubleshooting nutrition, cow comfort. Lindsay and I do a lot of stuff together. It's great that we can collaborate across regions. So excited to be here and talk about some of those collaborations today.
You guys have such a strong extension team there. It's pretty fun to see what you guys can generate.
Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to deliver cost-effective solutions for the animal health and productivity challenges you face. For conventional or organic production systems, Natural Biologics can help support rumen health and immune function, mitigate pathogens, and increase production efficiency. Visit naturalbiologics.com to learn more.
Great. Thanks for being here. So we're going to talk a little bit today about a big project you guys have underway, and I guess really the big topic is benchmarking, particularly for health. So what got you guys interested in working with farms on this topic?
As Betsy said, we've collaborated a lot over the last few years, and we've done a lot of work with the New York Farm Viability Institute. Mm-hmm. So we've done some benchmarking projects with them before, looking at cow comfort, lying time, lameness, and kind of benchmarking some animal outcome and facility and management factors. And then about a year ago, or I guess a year and a half ago now, we were approached by Farm Viability as they received some funding from USDA APHIS to try to tackle this benchmarking and getting an idea of where we're at in New York State in terms of disease incidence rate and treatment rates. So we partner with them, as well as with a couple of veterinarians, Dr. Tracy Potter and Dr. Michael Capel, to try to tackle how we go about benchmarking health on farms.
Okay. The question is there any way that we can sort of identify where farms are out of bounds in terms of, disease incidence on their farm? And then actually treatment is a different question, right? So what was driving this, like APHIS funding this? Are they interested in sort of antimicrobial resistance? Are they interested in just animal welfare? What's the driving question, I guess?
I think, so in New York, we've had a great success with doing selective dry cow therapy, right? We're getting the industry to move towards, let's do some culturing. Let's figure out what cows are doing before we just blanket treat animals, whether it's with mastitis or with dry cow treatments. And I think that was the guiding influence, I suppose, behind this project. And, I think as an industry, we're doing great at minimizing antimicrobial use, but we can still do better, right? So I think that was kind of the crux for let's look into this and see if this can be applied more broadly than just mastitis or dry cow therapy. Is that fair, Lindsay?
Yeah, really, like you said, as an industry, we feel like we're doing a really good job, and we are. We've drastically reduced the amount of blanket treatments we use. But again, like, what does that mean? And where are we at? And specifically, how do we provide each individual farm with feedback on where they're at relative to what we can maybe be striving toward?
Okay, so how'd you go about pulling this study off? Like, how many herds did you enroll?
So as with anything, you're aware, it was a balance between we wanted to get a large sample size and a representative sample size, but it needed to be done in a certain time frame. So, yes. So Betsy and I collaborated with another regional team, the Northwest New York team. So we had a pretty good range across the state of location. We had to do some narrowing of parameters to try to keep things just a little bit easier in terms of data collection. So we worked with all free stall herds, recognizing that we do have a lot of tie stalls, but we wanted to get a good cow numbers and good disease rates. So we went with herds that had at least 300 cows. And I think we ended up with our smallest herd was actually like 490 or something. And our largest herd was just under 4,000. So we ended up with quite a few cows total, 18 herds across the three regions in New York. And the goal was to have all of the herds having permanent treatment records for the year 2022. So we could look at the whole calendar year, taking into consideration seasonality. And we wanted those permanent treatment records online, or on Dairycomp, so that the vets could more easily pull it all out. I said goal because we were not able to actually get 18 herds enrolled that had permanent treatment records for all age classes of animals.
Yeah, did you find heifers to be a major challenge in terms of recorded disease events? That's what I found in the past.
Specifically calves, yes, calves on milk.
Yeah.
Many farms had those treatment records written down in a log, but a lot of those logs didn't get transferred to Dairycomp, unfortunately.
So you worked with the herd veterinarians to actually collect the data, is that correct?
We worked with, we incorporated the herd vet at some points throughout, especially at the end with report delivery, kind of going through the reports.
Okay.
But we specifically worked, we talked to the producers one-on-one without the vet to try to find out what they're doing on farm in terms of protocols, how you're diagnosing disease, how you're treating disease and entering it in the computer. And then from there, we took what was ever in Dairycomp and then just pulled it out based on the event codes. And then just summarized it that way.
So what kind of details did you have to go through? Like on some farms, I suspect they would just enter a disease and that implies that they received some treatment. Whereas other farms, it would be they write in a disease and then they separately write in if they decided to treat it. Is that part of what you're working through?
Everybody does something a little different, right? And so
yeah.
I think we've found with this that because everybody does something a little different, it's really hard to compare. It's really difficult because there's different disease criteria to diagnose. And there's different thresholds for what they want to enter in dairy comp or what they're capable of entering in dairy comp. And some are super detailed. When they put events into dairy comp, they have exactly what they should have for what they treated, the withhold time, who entered it. I mean, they have everything. And then some farms had the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And even like, even within farm too, sometimes, like you said, they'd have an event and then they'd have a remark. And that remark might change throughout the year. So depending on, like you said, depending on who's entering it into dairy comp, or maybe they had a change of personnel halfway through the year. Yeah. So I definitely think that we had the easier job on this project versus Michael and Tracy having to go through all of the, and then try to figure out like what was happening in January and then what was happening mid-year and stuff. So yeah, it was really messy.
Yeah. And one of the challenges, of course, is some of those comments are useful for maybe making decisions on that individual animal weeks and months later, right? But sure. When you're trying to analyze tens of thousands of animals and come up with a coherent story across locations and time, it becomes almost unusable, right?
Sure. Yeah. And even if there was a herd manager change within a farm within that year, people enter things different ways if there isn't a protocol set up or a protocol that's understood. And so sometimes you're like, well, this change, did it actually get better or worse? Or did you just change how you were entering it in the computer, right? It can be very frustrating. But within farm, a lot of times they can discern what happened. They can understand what happened and say, oh, no, this is when so-and-so started. And they just did it differently. But comparing those dairy comp data, especially with calf disease and treatments across farms, is like useless in a lot of ways, unfortunately.
Yeah, and this isn't the first conversation I've had like this, right, where we have, and actually you could find some correlates in human medicine, right? It's not, health is inherently difficult to say. There's a black and white line, with, you know, where here we're going to call it this and over here it's not. But were there any positives? So did you find some conditions where it's consistent enough over time and across farms where there is some potential to do some benchmarking?
I think it was interesting. So one of the things that they did also in addition to looking at the disease incidence rates in dairy comp was then kind of come up with like a table showing how that disease was diagnosed. So different criteria. So like for calf respiratory, for pneumonia event, what criteria did you use? Was she off feed? Did she like just look off? Did she have droopy ears? And there's a whole list of things. And when you look at how that disease is diagnosed, it's super messy. Every farm has something different. And again, like whether or not they stick to that. And some farms didn't have that she looked off, probably because it's implied, but it looked at all the different criteria that the different farms use. And it was just totally all over the place. And then when you look at the disease data, it's also all over the place, as Betsy was saying. But it's interesting. And then when you compare it to something like metritis, which is a kind of, I'd say, like a lot simpler of a disease to diagnose, when they looked at the criteria, it was basically, did she have off discharge and or did she look off? And it was a lot cleaner of a diagnosis criteria between the farms. And then when you look at the incidence rates put into dairy comp, it's pretty tight, especially like each farm we looked at month to month too, to see like, you know, did 1 month it spike? Again, understanding seasonality and also just things change. But if you look at that graph, it's pretty tight from farm to farm and within farm month to month. So I think that's just like a, I don't want to say a cleaner disease to diagnose because it's definitely not, but it's an easier disease, I think, to classify. And then the treatment's pretty standard too. If she's got it, this is what we're going to do. And then it gets put in dairy comp.
And like all this sounds like the farms don't know what they're doing. These are really well-managed farms. These are herds that are really trying very hard. They consider themselves leaders in herd health. They train their employees. They do things with a purpose. They want to do well. I mean, the average milk production on these herds, I think, was 86 pounds, and their preg rate was in the high 20s. I mean, they are really well-managed herds. It's not like that we just picked up random herds and said, hey, we're going to work on this project. We sought them out because they did so good. And it just really brings to light that there's everybody does things differently, right? There's different ways of doing stuff, and we don't have a standard diagnosis for disease and protocols, right? I mean, each of these farms, there might have been some vet oversight overlap among some of these farms, but mm-hmm. each farm might have had a different veterinarian and different oversight.
Do you think there's a sufficient reason to try to pull together consensus in the industry to try to drive towards more uniformity? Or is that, if you're managing a farm, is that just researchers wanting to have an easier time doing their job? And how does that benefit me as a farm, right?
Right.
Well, we're organizing cats, right?
I think the first step as an industry that we need to do would just be doing a better job at writing down what we're doing. Like Betsy said, these are really well-managed herds. And actually another thing that we did was we had a behavioral science group, Evidin, actually joined us on some of our farm visits and just kind of took some notes and some quotes and stuff about farmer perspectives and behaviors and kind of like, you know, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? What's motivating change? And so that was an interesting thing to have too. And they got some vet insights as well. And one of the vet interviews actually said, like, it seems like it would be really easy to do simple things, but it's not always on farm. There's a lot of other stuff going on. And like, yeah, it seems simple. Record your calf treatment rates. But like in one case, the farm thought they were doing it and, you know, protocol drift, change in personnel, they weren't doing it anymore. And they thought they were. So something similar like that. Now they're back to doing it. So I think as an industry, the first steps would just be making sure that we're actually recording every time we're treating animals and keeping it on a computer so that we can also then too, you know, you don't know if your respiratory health is getting worse if you don't know what it was last month for calves. So I think the first step would just be a bit more of a similar way of recording everything in Dairy Comp or some other permanent format so that we actually have what's happening on farms.
Because, you know, you think about this. Yes, we as researchers, we want to understand what the industry is doing and strive to do better all the time. But individual farms want that as well. And so how do you compare year over year or season over season if you don't have good data, right? You're going to beat your head against the wall. So I think, yeah, it's going to be helpful for us as researchers and extension people. But for individual farms, the big thing with this too, farms wanted to compare to their neighbors. They wanted to know, where do I stand against this similarly managed farm that I know is a well-managed farm? I consider myself a well-managed farm. I consider myself a leading farm in herd health. I want to know, how do I stack up in XYZ category? And I think if we can get farms to agree on disease diagnoses, protocols, you know, disease treatment, something, if we get them to agree on something, we're going to be able to benchmark more effectively so that farms can compare. Because otherwise it's, you know, well, they don't quite do it the same way. And so it's not comparable.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen tomorrow.
I think it's an easy pitch to get somebody to focus on getting consistent data collection within their farm, because to your point, you may not even know there's protocol drift going on, but a big drop in some condition actually might be a sign of lack of diagnosis, right? Or maybe it's a sign that things went really well, but I would want to dig in just as much on a change in a positive direction than a negative direction. But you can't do that if nothing's being recorded, right? And hopefully between veterinarians and other consultants, people are helping them. Part of the challenge is there's not really a super, super easy way. Yeah, even though Dairy Comp and PC Dart both have decent ways of following these things now, it's not like if you're an entry-level user of these software that it's easy to run those reports, right?
Yeah, and just like some farms had employees that don't use technology. So, or, you know, they go to a heifer raiser who's maybe Amish or, again, don't have access to Dairy Comp. So writing it on paper and then bringing that, the paper comes home with that heifer kind of thing. But then, yeah, someone has to take the time to enter it into Dairy Comp.
One thing that we've often done in research, because it should be reliable data, even though it's less fun to talk about, is just death rates. Did you guys look at death and compare farms on that basis?
So they looked at just general culling and death loss, but I don't think we really, and Betsy, chime in, I don't think we really did much with it.
Yeah, so we have good information on culling and mortality rate for the mature herd. And which is interesting. It's good data. We can trust that data. What was more interesting, I think, to the farmers is in the calf category. So we don't have good data we can compare on disease treatments, diagnoses and treatments for calves. But pretty much on every farm we talk to, that if a calf did die, if it got tagged and lived more than a day and it died at some point, it's going to get entered into the computer correctly. So that is one data point that we can compare against farms. We're still working on, I mean, how many data points did we collect in this? Oh my gosh, like yeah. On each farm. So there's a lot of information that we can dig through and have our vet partners dig through for us. But that's one that is, we could trust that one, I would say. So
yeah.
What that is, I don't know yet.
And that's a good point too. We didn't when we have our farm report that we handed back to farms, that was, I think, 6 pages, and we did our best to keep it as small as we could. And then there'll be a much larger report, but it's also too, like, that's a really cool question. And we definitely want to look more into that, but it's interesting how each farm we went to, as we walked through the report, they had a different question. Like, oh, but did you look at how this factor played a role? I'm like, no, we didn't necessarily, I don't have that data right now, but you're the first person that's asked about it. And then the next farm was like, yeah, but what about this factor? And we're like, and this is why we didn't do it, because we'd have, you know, a 200-page report to hand to farms if we included all those factors. But it's neat too, because every conversation we have, there's one more thing where we're like, oh yeah, that would be cool to look at and see.
Yeah, that's the fun part of those kinds of projects. So yeah, tell me a little bit more about reporting these back to farms. How do you go about walking through this? If there's like a kind of a black eye in terms of one place, how do you bring that up and how do you talk through that?
We, like I said, we compiled everything into about a 6-page report. We did our best to include the key animal outcomes that we measured. So we measured calf respiratory health and fecal scores, and then the dairy comp data. So the main diseases that were looked at were calf pneumonia, scours, and then adult cow mastitis and botrytis. So those are the four main diseases we focused on. So they got their report that had their dairy comp data for their disease rates, as well as any of the housing and management factors that we measured, and everything was obviously anonymous. They saw which farm they were, and then the 18 herd benchmark average or the 18 herds were shown so they could kind of see how they compare. We didn't make any general take home, conclusions about their disease rates besides what we physically measured ourselves. If it said they had 0 calves treated, we didn't say, yay, you have no respiratory health. We just said, you have 0 calves treated. Let's talk about what that means. So in some cases it meant they had very little respiratory health and they don't use antibiotics to treat. In other cases it meant that they weren't recording. So kind of just left that part more vague and, open-ended to have those discussions. But it was neat. It was, it spent an hour plus on each farm, just kind of walking through it and having some discussions, and it was well received overall.
Yeah, I mean, Barry, you say, the black eye, and I think, one of my farmers said it well. He goes, I already know what we do good. I want to know where I can do better, because then what's the point? If I just want to be complimented all day, great, but I have other stuff to do. And so they wanted to know the areas that they can improve in. And one of those areas on several farms were the first pen after weaning, so that transition heifer pen. And I would say the majority of the farms, this is a struggle. They're just overcrowding these girls, doing too many stressors in this time. And not that the wheels are falling off, but boy, those calves look like monsters when they're weaned. And then they're like, when they hit that pen or get through that pen, because it's a struggle. So, a lot of the conversations I had with the farmers in my region were, okay, where can we do better? And so being able to benchmark them against everybody else on stocking density or on feed space, those things are super, super helpful. And saying, okay, this is the dimensions of your pen. You cram 10 calves into it, but it should only have 6 in it. Let's think about this. What makes sense? And so the conversation can be, okay, we can put in another transition pen or overcrowd the older ones a little bit more so we can make sure we are undercrowding that first pen. I mean, the conversation can go a lot of different ways. Lindsay and I, we see a lot of dairies. We see a lot of different pens and what works. And that's the nice thing about, we can say, have you tried this? Have you thought about this? Here's a picture. This might work. And that black eye becomes, you know, it becomes a conversation about, oh, yes, we thought this wasn't that great. Now you're proving it to me. Okay, what can we do? It's a conversation. How do we make it better?
Yeah.
That's the part that, like, I love about this project is, okay, this is what we found. Let's make it better.
Like you said, it does reinforce the good things. And pharmacists have said that, like, we thought we were doing a good job. And I can see from this that we're clearly, you know, following our protocols. And that's, you know, these rates are on par with what I thought. And then a couple had said, it also reinforces, I thought we had a problem here. And you're showing me we do. So good. It is worth investing in or time or money to try to fix it. And sometimes it's a small thing. And other times it's, oh, we're really overcrowded. We need another barn. But yeah, just that extra reinforcement that, yeah, it is what you think it is, or, you know, this area is potentially is as much of an opportunity as you think it is.
Yeah, that's a good sign of a good manager, right? That they want to hear the hard truths instead of just being told they're perfect. And yeah, good sign that you, like you said, you probably had some top producers in this study. And a lot of it's just about, where do you prioritize the 50 things you could be working on your farm, right? And helping data always helps, you know, where the low-hanging fruit are. Were there one or two things, despite how messy the data was and how hard it was to have super clear takeaways, did one or two things stick out in your head just from giving the reports to the 18 farms of, boy, it seemed like the ones that had a little more struggles, it was consistently this issue, is it turnover of staff or stocking density or bad heat stress mitigation, or did anything stand out?
I don't think if there was anything super obvious, and I'm curious to hear how Betsy answers. For me, I don't think it was anything really obvious. I think you brought up a good point of labor, and that was something that we also looked into, was how many employees do you have that are responsible for treating and diagnosing disease? How much do you work with your vet? How long have you worked with that vet? Like, is there vet turnover? How active is your vet in the training of your employees with animal care and treatment of disease? And that was, like, labor just in general, obviously, came up as, like, an issue, and communication with different languages. But it also was interesting how, like, there was a difference between, I think it was something like 2 to 18 people per farm were responsible for treating and diagnosing disease. And we had a huge range of farm size from like 450 to 4,000. But the farm with 4,000 wasn't the one that had 18 people. And the farm with 450 wasn't the farm that had 2. So each farm, and whether, you know, not saying 2 is right and 18 is wrong, but there was a huge variation between farm and how many people were given that responsibility. And also how those employees are trained and retrained. So I think, like, one of the key on a few of the farms that did a little bit better with lower rates and better protocol compliance was that strong team. So having good communication from the manager to the employees, they have regular team meetings, they try to track these things and are able to then pick up that, hey, this is different this month or this quarter, what went wrong, and actually having that open dialogue between the vet, the owner, manager, and the employees.
Yeah, I'm thinking back through some of the things we looked through, and, you know, that the transition calf one was the, that the day that we were there in March last year, we did that snapshot of herd health criteria, and, you know, measuring the stall dimensions and stocking density, that sort of thing. And so that snapshot of the day, of course, it was March, which is terrible weather. Everybody was equally bad, right? Because in calf health, it's March, it's terrible. So everybody was equally bad. So being able to compare them on that one snapshot day was super helpful, because it, you know, it's not dairy comp data, it's not entered. It is what Lindsay and Caitlin and I saw that day that we were there, which has been helpful with other projects that we've done when we benchmark farms as well. So the transition calf one certainly stands out. And, you know, calf fecal health, that's another one that stood out. But then there's nuanced data, right? Because there's farms that ad lib, and then there's farms that feed 3 times a day with a set amount. So there's nuanced data that can be compared as well. And people want to know the differences. And, like, what do you bed with your dry cows? And, you know, there's so many nuanced things that, you know, it's only 18 farms. but that snapshot day, I think, is super, super helpful for saying, okay, on the day we are there, nobody was a train wreck, right? Everybody, you know, everybody had their challenges. That's a way it is on a farm. But the thing, I think, being able to compare water, right? How many inches of water do they have? How many inches of feed space do they have? It still comes back to a lot of basics, yeah. Right? If you can get the basics right, or if you can manage around the things that you do that you know are pushing what we, you know, if you are limiting feed bunk space and you have a 6-row barn, you know, we know what's going to happen. Are you able to manage around that? Or do we say, okay, you're not able to manage around it? So I think that snapshot day is super helpful, even though we can't compare dairy comp data per se.
And it was funny too, like when we were doing the report delivery and we reminded the farms, like we were here last March and we scored calf health, and they're like, ugh. And we're like, but we did it for everybody at the same time. And they're like, oh, okay. Like, so it's an even playing field. Okay, that's fair.
Oh, those are really good insights.
Elevate animal performance with Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your trusted ally in excellence. Their high-quality feed ingredients like coated nutrients and fat powders provide ruminants with extra energy, boosting health, productivity, and cost efficiency. Unleash your herd's potential with Berg & Schmidt.
You know, it's one thing to be able to statistically prove that this was a huge factor. It's another, you know, that you can take away things even if it's not, you know, necessarily completely true across all farms. But Lindsay, one thing you said that I think stuck home for me is, you know, the farms I think have generally been doing better, and partly it's because the turnover rate's so high, they have to at training new employees. But how often is it like, okay, we got that 4-hour training where we dumped, you know, a year's worth of insight into their brain in 4 hours, and how much do you think they actually retained, right? And then we're surprised 6 months later if the protocol, you know, drift is occurring. So I think you have a really good point about, you know, regular meetings, just making sure we touch base on things.
Yeah. And that was like still a pretty vague thing too. Like when we talked to them about training and retraining and we asked like, do you retrain? Yes. Like, what do you do? It was kind of like as needed, I feel like, in a lot of cases. So again, like it's not a fun thing to have to decide what you're going to do and try to stick to it. Cause yeah, it does probably need to be done on an as needed basis. In some case, if you've got an employee that does pick it up after a 4-hour training, then why would you, you know, do as much if they weren't picking it up? But yeah, definitely. I think an area there too, for some improvement and just outlining what that retraining should look like and making sure that we're making a priority to follow up with those employees at certain time points to make sure that we're all on track still.
Yeah. This conversation is reminding me of one of the farms that I work with. He is really taking his training to a completely different level than I've experienced. He meets with his employees. He wants them to pick the topic. He has a speaker in, and then he quizzes them. And then he re-quizzes them. He makes a test and he makes them take the test. Wow. And it really hammers home, okay, what did they totally miss the boat on that I have to figure out how to retrain them? Like, here's the routine. Do they know the routine for milking? Okay, we got the routine now. No, do you understand why the routine has to happen? And maybe one of those is off par. So it really gives him the feedback of, I need to do better on training. And it's like, it's such a simple thing. Like, we all get tested. We all go through school and college. Why aren't we testing our employees on their job, right? Why don't they show us that they can do the routine and retest month over month? So it was a fabulous conversation we had with him on that topic. Cause it's like, oh man, you really need to share this with the world, man. It's groundbreaking. It's so simple, but usually that's the answer, is the simple stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be high pressure, but, most people, including myself, would probably do a little better job paying attention if they know they're going to get asked about it at the end of the hour.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Look forward to hearing more about that study. A lot of good insights from it, even if some of it's just messy data and hard to distill much out of it. I'm curious for each of you, you know, I work at least half an extension. Tell me real quick, if you would, what's your favorite part of your job? Betsy, what would you answer to that?
I just love the farmers that I work with. The relationships I have with them, you know, I've been in this role almost 10 years, and it is by far being able to work with them and see how their farm business and their relationships evolve over time and what their goals are and how they're able to reach them. So yeah, it's being able to help them reach their goals and the relationships they have.
Great. Lindsay, you have to think of something different.
Similar. It's the fact that, and I didn't come from a farm. I was not raised on a dairy farm. So just, it blows my mind the fact that I'm allowed to go to people's farms and get to work with so many different people. It, you know, we're on a 50 cow tie stall one day and then a 3000 cow free stall the next day, like so many different systems and different ways of doing it. But ultimately everyone's got pretty similar goals of trying to profitably make milk and stay in business and do a good job. And it's cool that we get to be a part of that. And like Betsy said, relationships, you know, it's been 8 years, 10 years, and the same people are still reaching out to us and we get to keep working with them. And yeah, it's fun.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Our Yeast 40 Ruminal and Intestinal Double Modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. AgriTrack, leading traction solutions for herd health. Contact us today to boost safety, comfort, and savings for your herd. Invest in the best. Who would your cows choose? Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd. Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC, designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors, combined, promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential.
Good. Okay, Betsy, we're going to put you on the hot seat now, because Lindsay already had to answer these three famous questions we ask everybody, so we got to see what your answers are.
All right.
The first one is, what is your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
I would love to say that our Cornell Pro Dairy resources are, but that would be a somewhat of a stretch, because the Dairyland Initiative website has so many things that are so useful. We're working towards getting our Cornell Pro Dairy resources up there and getting things populated. But man, that the Dairyland Initiative, they are just amazing. They really are. So huge shout out to them. Lindsay and I have gone to their workshops before, and they're awesome.
If anybody's not familiar, that's from the University of Wisconsin's extension program. And yeah, especially on facilities, pretty hard to beat their resources.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
Okay. What about your favorite book or resource outside of ag?
Outside of ag, boy, you're opening up. during the pandemic, you know, we all, you know, had to do stuff to occupy time. I love to read, and, you know, not being able to do things really let me read some more. And so I found this online library, Internet Archive, I think, that I could download eBooks for free. And so I started reading Lord of the Rings again, which, if you know Lord of the Rings, they're super, super long. So that really matched the pandemic experience, right? So I love Lord of the Rings and the movies as well, but the books are way better, especially if you have an imagination. So...
Have you gotten into all the other Tolkien books before? And
boy, there's some rabbit holes you can get down. And boy, he was weird, but not terribly amount, not a terrible amount, but some.
For sure. Okay. Lastly, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
I think it is understanding their customer. You can give them all of the things that they're doing wrong and tell them that you need to change X, Y, and Z. But unless you understand why something happens or why they're doing it a certain way and like convey that to them that you understand, if you don't have that relationship, if you don't have that understanding of their business or their decision process, you're not going to be successful. You have to understand your customer, whether it's Lindsay and I working with farmers or if you're a consultant. Your agenda doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, that's good. Good insight there. That's a new one. It kind of reminds me, when I first started teaching, somebody shared the line that students don't care what you know until they know that you care. Yeah. It's kind of the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and dairies are so complex, such a crazy system that if you don't have some understanding of the big picture, why would they trust your opinion on one little thing, right? That's a good point.
It's those nuances.
Yep.
Everybody's different.
All right. Well, Lindsay Ferlito, Betsy Hicks, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, thank you. We enjoyed it.
It's a great conversation with two experts from Cornell University Extension. And been another episode here of the Dairy Podcast Show. Before you leave, don't forget to like the show so you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.